Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Lucerne, Switzerland, and from 1986 to 1988 served as Pontifical Swiss Guard protecting St. Pope John Paul II the Great. He's the author of The Pope and the CEO, John Paul II's Leadership Lessons to a Young Swiss Guard. Today, he's the Director of Entrepreneurship Programs at the Catholic University of America. His name, Andreas Widmer, who worked for a saint. And we're honored to have him as our guest, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Andreas Widmer, a 6'8" angel from God. Andreas, welcome, a real honor to have you.
Jack, This is a good name for the show. Anything is possible. If I can be associated with a saint and angels, anything is possible.
All right. Speaking of which, you grew up in Lucerne, 400 people in the town. Talk about your mom and your dad and your childhood, please.
Yeah. So Lucerne was the bigger capital of my state, but the village had 400 people in it. I come from we were the only non-farmers in the village, basically, and. Yeah, it feels to me like I grew up in literally in the last century, which I guess now is true. But I meant it from the last part. Still very much mountain Switzerland farming up there, mostly cow, dairy farming, but a very close knit community. My family is very close knit. I'm the youngest of six kids. And I like to say, if you've ever read Heidi, I'm the male version of Heidi, just a little taller and scruffy looking.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom? What's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
So from mom, I learned to accept people and empathy. And from dad, I learned determination and discipline.
Speaking of discipline, how did you ever become a Swiss Guard?
Well, by the grace of God, now I know. But, when it happened, so I didn't really have a faith in God or the church or anything like that when I applied there. I had a difficult childhood in the sense of, as difficult as it can get if you live in a 400 people mountain village. There's no drugs or anything else. You can't get into too much trouble, which I'm glad, I'm glad I grew up there. But it was more sort of that I was an outdoor kid. I now know I have ADHD and dyslexia. So I had a tough time in school, just was horrible at school. I just could not fit into their school system and into thinking the way that the school system demanded of me. Just total, I eked through from one class to the next. I just eked by, like just on the bottom. And then eventually I went into the military and there I excelled. We have a militia in Switzerland. There I excelled. I went on to become, start on the bottom in the militia, then was asked to become an officer. And then found out that I could go into this foreign legion to become a bodyguard. And to me, I'm telling you, Jack, that was the coolest thing you could possibly do. And then I found out it was the Pope. So, and to me, it's like, okay, whatever. I don't mind. I would have been the bodyguard to anybody who asked me if they paid me. And I just thought it was such a cool thing. But alas, it was the Pope. And so off to Rome I went.
The Swiss Guard was started 514 years ago. 1506. Tell us about the Swiss Guard.
So you see, the Swiss have a long history, a military history, both for revolutionizing war because of their agility and their sort of, they wouldn't march in formation or have armors and things like that. They would basically just use whatever they could and go fighting. Very early on, the Swiss became mercenaries for a very simple reason, which is actually similar to what happened to me. Is you see, in Switzerland, you'd have a large family and a farm, right? But the farm goes to the oldest son. So every other boy in that family is going to either you become the servant of your brother or you have to leave. It's one or the other. And if you leave, where are you going to go? There's not that many jobs. You know, I'm speaking of 500 years ago and so. And so these younger men would leave. They'd be very well built, well fed, very strong because they grew up on farms and would go and have nothing to do. So the Swiss government, which if you want to call it that, agreed that they could go and serve in these foreign legions. In the foreign legion, the deal was you go, you fight, and you get a percentage of whatever you loot. And so the Swiss, they would say, you know, death or wealth. And they would go and serve their foreign masters and come back, either die or come back with wealth. And that is something the Swiss did for centuries.
Let's go back to December 24th, 1986. Andreas, what do you remember about that afternoon and evening?
So that was the first time, well, it's the first time I met Jean-Paul. But before preceding that, it also was the worst, I like to call it my worst emotional storm. I actually excelled so much that I graduated from the recruit school early, a good 2 weeks early. 2 weeks early. I graduated on the 23rd. I was supposed to graduate on January 1st or the 31st of December. Anyway, but I was asked to go and serve instead of somebody who was sick, and I was to say that I was resentful of that is an understatement. I was angry because they made me go to work even though I wasn't supposed to yet. I was supposed to rest on my laurels for graduating early. They made me work not just at any time, but on that evening, which in Switzerland, in most of Europe, Christmas is celebrated on the 24th in the evening, not on the 25th. So, and there was, of course, going to be a huge party at the guards, at the barracks and everything. But I was asked to go and serve from 8 o'clock in the evening until 8 o'clock in the morning. And that was the most, that was to me, that was the worst thing you could do, what you could do to me. And that made me question everything. It made me question why I would go to Rome, why I would go into the service. These people don't care about me. Just like what a 20-year-old would think up in their mind. I ended up going to work because, you know, there's no other choice because this is a military unit. And so my position that night was the last person before the Pope. There's a little room up on the third floor. You know, they say it's a palace and everything. It's a really old house. It's like a 600-year-old house. And the Pope has a little apartment in there. It was very simple. But it has nice paintings around. This room is basically connecting the Pope to the outside corridor. And in that little room is a Swiss guard who basically is in there and there's nobody else around. You lock yourself in to both sides and there you are. And this is such a private place that you can also, they also give you a chair and a desk. You can sit there and read or write if you want. But I didn't. I arrived there at 8 o'clock in the evening and basically worked myself into the worst emotional storm I've ever had, questioning like only a 20-year-old could of why did I ever agree to this? The world is against me and I'm the worst human being. You know, I knew that I got into the military because I was tough and big and tall and this and that. And I knew that this was all a put on. Of course, I was just pretending. You know, inside I felt like a 7-year-old wanting to be back with my mom. And I cried all night there. I cried until like 11 o'clock, from 8 to 11, really just being in horrible shape. And then the radio went off and the commander said, Widmer, the Pope is going to leave his apartment. Leave him out. Let him out. And I just had enough time to turn the key. You know, the Pope is actually, you know, he turned the key. He was, in a sense, locked in, right? Because so all I could do is turn the key and then the Pope would open the door and this huge door opened up and this beautiful sort of warm yellow light would come into my room. And there stood John Paul II in the doorway. He was a stout guy, a pretty tall guy. And he had this habit of when he stood in the doorway, he would when he was interested in something, he would like tilt his head to the side. And so he'd look at me and say, "Hey, you're new. I've never seen you around here. What's your name?" And I was so flabbergasted. And I think I told him my social security number or something. And he stretched out his hand. And so I stretched out my hand. And then, of course, our eyes meet. And the second I noticed, I looked at his eyes and I noticed how I must have looked, having just cried for 3 hours. And I knew he noticed right away. And he stopped and he looked at me and he said, "Of course, this must be your first Christmas away from home, isn't it?" I'm telling you, Jack, I started to, my lips start to shake. There's like tears coming down my eyes. I hold his hand and I'm looking at the Pope. I'm starting to cry in front of the Pope. And he just pulled me in and he held my other heart, with his other hand, he held my elbow and he pulled me in and he had these beautiful light gray eyes. And he says, "You know what, Andres, I know this is difficult. I tell you what, I'm very glad you're here. You're going to have a good time here. I'll look after you." I'll tell you what, and, you know, this is me, the bodyguard, right, crying in front of the person I'm supposed to protect. He looked at me and he says, I tell you what, I'm going to go celebrate Mass right now, and I'm going to celebrate it for you. Everything is going to be okay." That was a turning point in my life. If he would have told me, go and pray or something like that, I would never know what to do with this because I didn't know how to. But that evening, he changed my heart. You know, he changed my heart, and I was never the same.
Talking to Andreas Widmer about St. John Paul II the Great, who changed millions of hearts in his lifetime. And I'm Jack Rasol, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Andreas Widmer, who was a Swiss guard. And from 86 to 88, he served St. John Paul II the Great. He grew up Karol Wojtyla in Poland. His dad died when he was 9. Brother died 4 years later. I'm sorry, his mom died when he was 9. 4 years later, brother died. His dad died when he was 21. He had unbelievable courage, Andreas. Talk to us about his courage.
I think that his courage came not from a grand design of plan, but from an acting in the moment, being present in the moment, having a vision of goodness, of what ought to be, and then acting in the moment. I believe that he had a strong faith in humanity. Just as he had a faith in God, he had a faith in humanity. And he knew that humans, that people would react to the good, the true, and the beautiful. Here we're specifically speaking about people in the Eastern Bloc, or what used to be the Eastern Bloc, that if he would just promote those ideas of the true, the good, and the beautiful, that people will follow that. And he did that, but he did it on a very daily basis, on a very simple way, one-to-one. I tell you, Jack, meeting this man taught me a lot, because every time I met him, I felt like I was the reason he got up in the morning. So that's how much present he was. And when he does this with everybody, then you start to get a it's almost like an avalanche of this kind of goodwill, that this is very contagious. And that's, I believe, how he could become such a huge influence in the world, because everybody who saw him speak, who heard him speak, felt very much like he spoke to them personally.
He was known as the global pope. They said he was an army of one. He took 104 trips abroad to 129 countries, 5 continents, probably the most seen person in history. And when he became pope and went to the window the first time, the first words he ever spoke to the world were,
be not afraid. Yeah,
that was his favorite saying. Talk about be not afraid.
Yeah. You know, in that sense, he's not very different from Pope Francis. When you say about going to the window the first time, very unconventional, breaking lots of traditions and doing things that were done before, but also very much appealing to the human heart, very much like Pope Francis. And he was the kind of person that knew what to do in the moment to move somebody's heart. He felt about the fear or to be not afraid would be followed by him saying, you know, put out to the deep, go out and do stuff. And especially to young people, so energetic, so inspiring to me. This man had more faith in me than I had in myself. He would say, I can't wait to see the wonderful things you're going to do with your life. And I'm like, what? You're talking to me? What are you talking about? You know, and that's that kind of faith in humanity, in the individual person, and that kind of love, really, is something that is an experience that you're experiencing God. You know, it says in the Bible that God loved you first. And that's very much like that, that we as now, me being older and I teach at a university, I try to behave the same way, to see the good in the student, in the person I meet, and to encourage that, that is a path to goodness and change.
Speaking of to see the good in everybody you meet, tell us about the story about Luigi, the homeless defrock priest, and Father George from Kansas City, please.
Well, there's this priest who, well, you know, you go to these conferences and this priest was there from the United States, and he stayed at this house or the apartment, an apartment with friends, and would go, because these meetings, they would last for like over a month or something like that. And he would go to these conferences, and then towards the end, the Pope was going to show up and actually participate in the conference on the last day. And what happened is that that morning where the Pope showed up, on the way out, this priest was able to speak with the Pope. Actually, I have to start a little bit earlier. That morning, the priest actually would go always to go and say Mass at a place. And this, and when he said Mass, he would come out, you know, go into a church and come out. And he always saw this homeless person sitting outside who looked at him strangely. And one day, the day before he met the Pope, he actually went up to this homeless person and said, you always look at me so strangely. Do we know each other? I mean, I'm from America. And this priest says, yes, we do know each other. And he cussed at him a lot, but he said, yes, we do know each other. We went, when you came here for a year, we took classes together at the university. I was also in the seminary, and then this priest recognized him and said, of course, Luigi, you're one of the Italian seminarians that went to me to the Gregorian. And, you know, I thought you were ordained and everything. And he said, well, I was, but that was a long time ago. And I don't want anything to do with this anymore. And he was basically a homeless guy in Rome at this point. And this priest could not believe his eyes and couldn't believe what happened. And was so impacted by this that when then later on John Paul showed up in, at this conference, on the way out, this priest would push his way and basically get into John Paul's way and says, Holy Father, I need to tell you something. And he says, well, what is it? And he told him the story of this homeless guy who was a priest. And he says, Holy Father, I just ask you to please pray for this man. I don't know what happened to him, but please pray for him. And John Paul says, I will certainly do that, and I will do another thing as well. I ask you to come to dinner today with Luigi to me. I have nobody over for dinner today. Why don't you and Luigi come to dinner? And he says, what? And he says, yeah, he'll, you know, and his secretary would give him the details. And so this priest leaves and goes back to this church and, of course, finds Luigi there and says, you know, we're going to have dinner with the Pope. And this homeless guy was like, you are crazy. You're trying to fool me into something. Long story short, this priest was like saying, look, you're my ticket to go have dinner with the Pope. And that is going to happen if I have to carry you there. And he brought him back, basically freshened him up and brought him, put him into new clothes and brought him promptly at like 8 o'clock or 8:30 to the Pope's apartment. And they were let in and they had dinner. And during this whole time, there was like a conversation, very, a very normal kind of conversation. Luigi didn't really want to say too much. And then Monsignor then Civish, now Cardinal Civish, was asking this American priest to go and check something that he wanted to show him, the personal private chapel of the Pope or so. And so that Luigi and the Pope were alone, and he could tell this priest that that Pope wanted to speak with this homeless guy. And it took forever for him to get back into the room. He knew that Pope had assigned for Civish, for his secretary, that he would know when it was okay to come back into the room. And it took for a very long time. Eventually, they were let in, and, you know, and Luigi's face was all changed, and they had dessert, and then, you know, off they went and said goodbye, and the Pope blessed them and everything. And on their way out, of course, the first thing this American priest was saying, Luigi, what happened? What the heck happened so long? Why couldn't we come back into this room? And Luigi sort of had tears in his eyes and said, you wouldn't believe what happened, but... you know, just the grace and the way that he approached me. And there was not a question about my past. It was just like he started to call me father and priest and said what he could do for me and so on. And so so I said that I'm in no shape or not fit to be a priest and so on. And John Paul said, this is only a question of one confession and forgiveness. And so Luigi said, so the Pope offered to hear my confession. And then the priest said, and then what? And he says, well, and then he gave me absolution. And then he turned around and said, now, Luigi, you hear my confession. And so this homeless priest hears his confession. And then he says, I will put you back in charge, back into the good standing of the priesthood as of tonight. Please go to Father so-and-so at this and this parish. I want you to start the homeless ministry and be the priest of the homeless as of today on, and that he was until he retired.
Andreas Widmer, unbelievable story. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Rasulo. We're with Andreas Widmer. Since 2012, he's been the Director of Entrepreneurship Programs at Catholic University of America. Andreas, I quote you, Pope John Paul didn't convince me of the faith through anything he said. He convinced me of the faith by who he was, what he did. I eventually thought, whatever that guy has, that's what I want. Please.
Yeah. That was a very palpable experience, and he knew it, and he knew that I had this huge admiration for him, but he wouldn't accept it. He wouldn't accept it. He would always point and say, what I have is a person, it's a faith, it's a person, and the person's name is Jesus Christ. And that's, if you admire anything I do, this is who you admire, not me. And he would not allow himself to be put on a pedestal like that. This is a very useful lesson, of course, as you go on in life, as you get a little older. I see a lot of students. I teach a lot and was very blessed with a career in high tech and a good amount of success in my own career. And I find that that is a very similar thing, that you end up having people look at what you're doing in different kinds of environments and trying to give you the accolades or so. And I find it very inspirational and imitable to follow John Paul in that, and in a sense become a waypoint, a directional signal pointing at Jesus rather than taking accolades yourself. I think that's a very good it's a very good habit.
If he was alive today with the COVID and the hatred between the two sides, what would he tell us, Andreas?
I think he would tell us very similar things as John as Francis tells us now. To pay attention back on the individual, to pay attention as being peacemakers, to pay attention to who we are as people, not what we have as people, and to move away from a pure utilitarian way of dealing with each other and build up a civilization of love and appreciation for each other. I think it'd be very similar to what Francis is telling us today.
We're talking to Andreas Widmer, He's the author of The Pope and the CEO, John Paul II's Leadership Lessons to a Young Swiss Guard. 5 points, encourage people to dream big, keep their eyes on the long term, be fully present for every conversation, show people that you believe in them, view work not as a burden but as an opportunity, and the last one, celebrate entrepreneurship. Really, the Pope talked about entrepreneurship?
He was a super entrepreneur. Lots of people, lots of saints are entrepreneurs. And he certainly did that. He believed very much in the creativity of the human person. He saw two aspects of work. He saw the physical part of work, the external sign of work, where we make more, where we create. And something he explained to me that I never realized before is that, you know, we humans are the only animal that can work. Animals don't work, right? But we work. We can, and work, the aspect of work that's of our activity that is work is that we have an idea and we can turn it into a reality. We can impact the natural world and create something that wasn't there before. In a sense, we can make something out of nothing. Well, there's only one being that can do that because that person would have to be outside of the material world, and that is God. We can work because we are made in the image of the Creator. That's why we can work, because we are made in the image of a Creator. That's why we create things, in a sense, things out of nothing. That gives work a much more subjective meaning, aside from the objective meaning of just making more. And that is that when we make something, we don't just make more, we become more. You see, when we work, we imitate God. And in religious language, that would mean if you imitate somebody like God who is holy, then you become like them, like holy. So in religious terms, you'd say that work is a means or a path to holiness. In the secular world, we could translate that and say that work makes us fully human. That is, through work, the subjective meaning of work, we become the best version of ourselves. We can actually realize ourselves all the way into transcending that part of my character, the part of my work, a part of my being is in a way an imprint on the work that we do. And so in all that we do, our imprint lives on with it to some extent.
He died on April 2nd, 2005. Cardinal might have told me, Jack, here's a dead man with almost no possessions and no more power. He's in a simple pine box. And to the left of the casket is 400 plus of the world's leaders with all the powers, millions of people. What struck you the most about that day of his funeral?
I was there that day with a huge divine intervention by chance, or he would always say there's no such thing as chance, by providence. I was actually there in Europe. I arrived in Europe the night he died, and I ended up being there at the funeral. What struck me actually is that the rain held off until he was buried. And then it rained, it poured like you wouldn't believe. But what struck me is I went there, and I wanted to be there at that funeral without my special access. I could go to Rome and go see the Pope, you know, because I once you're a Swiss guard, you're in this club, this fraternity, and I would have access. I wanted to be there for him as a pilgrim, as my pilgrims, my homage to him. And I basically just stood there like a million other people. And what I found is that there were people around me because everything was stuck. Like you couldn't move forward or backwards. The food ran out in the restaurants and the cafes around us and everything. And I stood in line for that mass from like 4 o'clock in the morning until I think it started at 10 or 10:30. And there were the same people around me and everybody was sharing. Everybody was exchanging their life stories. Most people around me were actually not Catholic, but were there in awe and inspiration of this man. And this was a coming together of the world to the extent that I have never seen it before, and that I believe would be a good thing to repeat.
We're talking to Andreas Widmer. How many of us can say our former boss was a saint and mean it literally? And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack Krasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Andreas Widmer, who leads the Principal for Entrepreneurship at Catholic University of America, also known as the Center for CIOCA. Andreas, what is an entrepreneur?
Good question, Jack. I would say that an entrepreneur is someone who does more with less. Someone who knows how to put a vision into action. Entrepreneurship is something you do, not something you think or something you are.
A lot of our young people today believe that socialism is the way to go. Why is that? And what do you say to those young people?
I believe that some of our parts of our economy have become so corrupt, you could call it a form of crony capitalism, have become so corrupt and skewed that it makes socialism look good to some young people. I would think of the areas where that need substantial improvement are things like the financial industry and very large multinational companies who are just basically not accountable to anybody. Those two things are on the front pages and people experience them all the time, so it makes socialism look good to people. However, that is not actually what was classically known as capitalism. I don't like that term. I like the free market economy. The competitive market economy is something that actually brings out the best in people, because it builds on human excellence, and excellence for humanity is its goal. One of the things that I'm trying to do for people to really understand what business is about. Did you ever notice, when I became a professor at the Catholic University, I noticed when I looked around at the business schools, is that business seems to be the only thing where you teach without ever having to do it yourself. That most people who teach business have never done business themselves. They just talk about it. Imagine if your doctor would be educated by somebody who hasn't even been a doctor themselves. And more so, or even more importantly, that business students get at best a shot at the case method where they pretend to be a business person, but they never actually get to work in an actual business, which is strange to me. It's like learning to swim on dry land. So when I was invited to help build a business school at Catholic University, I asked to be the one to teach the first course to the freshmen when they come for their four-year education. And my course, I still do it. I just started it a couple of months ago again. The first thing you do when you come to our business school at the Catholic University of America is you start a business. Because guess what? That's what you're studying. And the only way to understand how business works and what motivates a business is to have a business. And I've taught hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of students, and there was never one who didn't come up with an idea for a business. And so every freshman at our university has a business.
If you want to learn more, www.business.cua.edu. Andreas, talk to us about profit. A lot of people think that that's an evil word, a bad word.
So two quick things. On the one hand, remember how I talked about that working is to imitate God in God's creative power. Just like God created the world and the universe and everything, we get to create through our work. Notice that God never made anything that isn't profitable. There is not a plant, not even stones melt and produce and spew out more stones than before. There is nothing on this earth that God creates that isn't profitable, and neither should we. Now, should you walk around and say profit, profit, profit? No. Profit to a business is like what white blood cells are to the human body. Jack, you're not sitting there saying, let me think about my white blood cells, because if I take away your white blood cells, you'd be dead in 2 hours. Yet you're not obsessing about them. Why not? Because white blood cells are a result of a healthy lifestyle. You sleep, you drink, you eat, you exercise, you do these things, and then the white blood cells will take care of themselves, and that you will have them. So it is with business. If you find a customer need that you satisfy through employee or work excellence and create value, then profit will be there and things will take care of itself. So is profit important? Absolutely, for a business to survive. Should we obsess about it? No. What we should obsess about is to add value through our work and through our excellence to real issues and problems and needs that customers have.
In these crazy times, a lot of people say, God is no longer in control. He is in control. Talk about how God is in control.
God is in control because, you know, did you ever notice that the only intersection to heaven, to eternity, to now, is to this world, is the present. The past is already past and isn't repeating, and the future hasn't happened yet, and so therefore we're not participating in it. The only place where God intersects with us is in the present, and if you just calm down enough and go into a quiet space. In my tradition, we would go into a church and be in front of the Eucharist and calm down to that point. I guarantee you that if you calm your spirit, you will actually experience God in the present. And that means that God is far from quiet and far from not active in our world. This is a God of history, and God is here yesterday, now, and tomorrow.
Andreas? When you meet our Heavenly Maker and he says, well done, good and faithful servant, St. John Paul II is going to be there and say, Andreas, I believed in you, but you turned out even better than I thought you were going to turn out. So keep up the great, great work.
That's very kind, Jack. Thank you, and God bless.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.
Believe in yourself.